Oh, church, do you love Jesus? Well, that's pretty good. I think word got out. But let me ask you again. Are you sure you love Jesus? It could be better, you know. I'm going to give you another chance. Oh, church, do you love Jesus?
Oh, yes, we love Jesus.
Are you sure you love Jesus?
Yes, we sure we love Jesus.
Well, tell me why you love Jesus.
This is why we love Jesus.
Because he first loved me. Oh, oh, how I love Jesus. Oh, how I love Jesus. Oh,
how I love Jesus. Because he first loved me.
There is a name I love to hear. I love to see its word. It sounds like music in my ear. The sweet first verse, beautiful. Thank y'all for doing that. You made a believer out of me, but I still got a sermon to preach. Let's turn into John in chapter 21. Thank you, Dean, for reading that for us. Have you ever been asked that question, do you love me? It kind of stirs you a little bit. Why are you asking? What did I do? I wonder how Peter took that. I know by the third time he's very disturbed, very bothered. But there is a prequel that we need to understand. That this passage is not set alone by itself, but something else happened. And we'll turn into John in chapter 13. Jesus in the upper room has already predicted his betrayal in front of the disciples. Let's begin and let's go ahead and begin in verse 31. When he was gone, Jesus said, and that talking about Judas, now is the Son of Man glorified, and God is glorified in him. If God is glorified in him, God will glorify the Son in himself, and will glorify him at once. My children, I will be with you only a little longer. Jesus is looking at his death, warning them, you will look for me. And just as I told the Jews, so I tell you, where I am going, you cannot go, or you cannot come. A new commandment I give you, love one another. As I have loved you, so you must love one another. By this all men will know that you are my disciples, if you love one another. Simon Peter asked him, Lord, where are you going? Now you may have been wondering what the title of that prequel was or is. Peter so often is interjecting himself, thinking he's saying the right thing, but Jesus catches him and says, not the right answer. So often Peter says something and you could just almost hear that buzzer go off. Ah! Woo! What just happened? Foot and mouth disease is the title of the prequel. But Peter asked him, Lord, where are you going? And Jesus replied, where I am going, you cannot follow me now, but you will follow later. Peter asked, Lord, why can't I follow you? I will lay down my life for you. Now just stop there. What does that mean? All his loyalty, all his fidelity. I love you, Lord. I will die for you. I will lay down my life for you. But Jesus pops his bubble. Then Jesus answered in verse 38, will you really lay down your life for me? I tell you the truth, before the rooster crows, you will disown me three times. I will lay down my life for you. You're going to deny me three times. You can turn into chapter 18. It's painful to read each of the denials, but let's look into our own lives. I picture a scene where the police are knocking at your door. They have your teenage son, and he has done something despicable. And I think that a dad might think for a moment, if the officer says, is this your son? To say, no, I don't know him. And in a lot of ways, you're like, the way he is acting, I don't know him. I don't know who raised him. On a lighter level, so often, maybe we get a phone call at home. A problem has come up. And I turn to my wife and said, your daughter has some issues. And I'm not denying her so much, but I'm like, this requires a specialty. A certain thing that dad's not going to be able to do. I'll take the other phone calls. I'll fix whatever. I'll kill the bugs. But this one is up yours. And then she might do the same thing and say, your son did this. And you're like, and the question comes up, well, why is he my son when he does something wrong and he's your baby when he does something right? And even my son picks up on it. When I'm talking to other people, I refer to him as the boy. Well, the boy, this and that, and it's really a compliment, but he's like, Dad, I'm right here, okay? But we can relate to that. Now, I got to make it hurt a little bit. Because maybe in your life, or you've seen it in other people's lives, people denying someone. A husband out at a place where he shouldn't be, or with people that he shouldn't be, he might reach over and pull his ring, his wedding ring, off his finger. And I tried that this morning. It's not coming. It is not coming. I don't think, anyways. What's he doing? He's denying his very wife. Denying the one the love of his life supposed to be. But can we do that in other ways? Can we disrespect our spouse? Can we ignore them, take them for granted? All ways of denying who they are. Now, Peter's already acknowledged who Jesus is. He's the Son of God. He's willing to die for him. But when push comes to shove, and let me be clear, this is not pile on Peter day. Because Peter represents us in our lives in the way that we live. Someone once said, if it was illegal to be a Christian, would there be enough evidence to convict us? And it's a question. Let's go into chapter 18. Jesus has been arrested, taken away, many of the disciples deserting him, but Peter follows. And in chapter 18, verse 19, the high priest is questioning him, but let me go back to verse 15, rather. Simon Peter and another disciple were following Jesus because this disciple was known to the high priest. He went with Jesus into the high priest's courtyard, but Peter had to wait outside at the door. The other disciple, who was known to the high priest, came back, spoke to the girl on duty there, and brought Peter in. Now, let's certainly give Peter a shout out. He's there with another disciple. He's there. Others are not. But she says, "You are not one of his disciples, are you?" Interesting way of wording that. The girl at the door asked Peter. He replied, I mean, here's an open question. Yes, yes, I am. Yes, I'm proudly a follower of Jesus Christ. But what comes out of his word, maybe even to Peter's surprise, what? I am not. I am not. It was cold, and the servant and official stood around a fire they had made to keep warm. Peter also was standing with them, warming himself. The high priest goes on and questions Jesus, and we'll skip into verse 25. As Simon Peter stood, warming himself, taking care of himself while Jesus is on trial alone, he was asked, "You are not one of his disciples, are you?" Peter's given a second chance, and what does he say? He denied it, saying, "I am not." One of the high priest's servants, a relative of the man whose ear Peter had cut off, showing that he was not only willing to die, but willing to kill for Jesus. But here's someone who was there in the garden, whose ear Peter had cut off, challenged him. "Didn't I see you with him in the olive garden?" There, setting a place that would be harder for him to deny. Again, Peter denied it. And at that moment, a rooster began to crow. Jesus had warned him. Jesus had told him. Peter had done what he thought would be unthinkable. Deny Jesus Christ three times in a row. Three times. And if you're tempted to be hard on Peter, have you ever denied anyone? Have you ever been in that role? Would it be more convenient if I just told a lie? If I just didn't draw attention, let me just pass on through. I don't want to deal with the conflict. Now, Jesus goes through the process, the trials, the beatings, the mocking, the judgment. He's nailed to the cross, there between two thieves. He dies. But he is raised up. God raises him up. And you think about Peter at that moment, you think for a moment, he said, "I wish he hadn't come back to life, because I'm going to have to confront the things that I have done." I wonder if he felt that way. I know I would. Uh-oh. I mean, it was bad that he died, but now he's alive. And you can maybe even sense a dread that Peter might have. And so let's go into chapter 21 and realize the setting. Jesus has been raised. And I'll begin in verse 11. Simon Peter climbed aboard. Jesus sees them out fishing. He's given them instructions about which side. And it was a full. Their catch was full of large fish. But even with so many of the nets, the net was not torn. So Jesus said to them, "Come and have breakfast." None of the disciples dared ask him, "Who are you?" Why? They knew it was the Lord. Jesus came, took the bread, and gave it to them, and did the same with the fish. This was now the third time Jesus appeared to his disciples after he was raised from the dead. And when they had finished eating, Jesus said to Simon Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you truly love me more than these?" And I take a moment for a second. I wonder what Peter thought. More than these, the fish? The fish? And I think sometimes I would be that way. And my wife could turn to me and say, you know, Daryl, do you love me more than these? And we'd be eating a plate of barbecue. And she might catch me thinking for a moment. She might catch me, well, I was just wiping my mouth. And I said, well, this is pretty good barbecue. And I don't know. Did Peter think, what about these disciples that are around me? Do you love me more than your brothers? But he says, do you love me more than these? And of course, what does Peter say? Yes, Lord, he said. You know that I love you. And I think Peter wants it to be over. Whew, I survived the encounter. Jesus says, feed my lambs. Feed my lambs. Do you love me? What did Jesus say? If you love me, you will keep my commandments. Feed my lambs. Peter could be thinking literally, Jesus doesn't have any lambs. He died pretty much penniless. But Peter knows how Jesus speaks. When you think of lambs, they're a lot of fun, huh? Cute. But they don't eat the same food, do they? Lambs want their mother's milk. They're not ready for the adult meal, the grasses. They've got milk. So Jesus is focusing, Peter, if you love me, feed my lambs. In a sense, he's giving Peter a purpose. He's focusing him on what he needs to do. That action doesn't stop, or the words aren't enough, and the action doesn't stop the day you get married, does it? Husbands. You can say, I love you. You can say, I do. But what does that mean? You've got some things to do. You've got some things to take care of. You have someone to attend to, and in reverse as well. Jesus then said, Simon, son of John, do you truly love me? And if he wasn't thinking it the first time, he's thinking it now. He's like, why are you asking? Why did you just ask me the same question? Because people are fickle, aren't they? They can say something, mean it, but given the challenge, given adversity, given conflict, sometimes they say it's easier to just deny it. So he answers, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. Jesus said, take care of my sheep. This time the adults, perhaps, the older sheep. Well, he's invoked an imagery there. Take care of the sheep. As Jesus was the good shepherd, Peter, you're going to be tending the flock. It's interesting that he says, feed. How do you feed? Physically? Let's talk about that. Because this applies not only to Peter, not only to elders, not only to deacons, but to each one of us. Are we not called to feed? Feed spiritual food. When you're raising a child in the way they should go, what is that way? Teach them. Just like Jesus answered at the first temptation in the desert, Satan said, turn these stones into bread. You'll have something to eat. But Jesus answered from the book of Deuteronomy saying, man cannot live by bread alone, but by what? Every word that proceeds out of the mouth of the Father. Every word. Teach them the word. Teach them what I taught you, Peter. Teach the sheep. But then he goes on. The third time he said to him, Simon, son of John, do you love me? This time, Scripture says, Peter was hurt because Jesus asked him the third time, do you love me? He said, Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you. And Jesus said, feed my sheep. Feed my sheep. Each one of us as parents, I can, if my kids kind of did the same version of this and they came to me and said, Dad, do you love me? How do you answer that one? You could just say quick, yeah, yeah. But you realize that they're seeking for something more. Dad, do you love me? Am I something special to you? Am I important to you? And so then I start thinking, well, let me tell you how important you are. We prayed for you. We prayed before you were conceived. We prayed for you in your mother's womb. We worked to prepare a place for you that was safe and up to the stylish requirements of the Dallas, area. Okay. Our own separate room. We read books. You almost want to say, are you crazy? Why are you asking me that? Of course. Who's paying your college tuition? Now, on and on, you're buying them things. You're doing that, and you think it's getting across, do you love me? But sometimes kids doubt. So we understand the wife that says, do you love me? But we start thinking, did I not take out the trash? Did I not take my plate? What did I do to mess up? Why is she doubting? And there's a deeper meaning going on there. But we have to stop and listen and address, where are you coming from? Maybe even ask some more questions. Jesus is asking each one of us, do you love me? Do you love me? You're here today. You're here to sing his praises. What about tomorrow? What about the next day? What about when it comes difficult? What about when it's easier to deny him than to say, I love him? And what does saying I love him mean? Feed my sheep, obey his commands, teach his word. What can you learn from feeding a sheep, especially a lamb? Think about that. Have you ever had to take care of a dog, feed it? Can you just feed it once and go away for a week? What do? Feed it every day. And of course, that baby is maybe even a greater analogy. Can you just feed that baby once a day? No, that baby needs to be fed whenever it needs to be fed. And then it's going to let you know. Now, think about just that idea of feeding. What are we eating? What are we to be fed? The spiritual food. We talk about diets. Some people are trying a spiritual diet where they only eat for 1 hour once a week, if that. Now, if it were food, you would say, that's not a good diet. You're going to starve. But when it's spiritual food, we're willing to fast. Now, we're all human. We all get busy. But you see what I'm saying. Why did Jesus say, feed my sheep? When he was in the desert, he fasted 40 days from food so he could focus and pray. It also reminded them of the manna. Remember in the desert? They were to gather it each morning, daily bread. When Jesus was asked to teach the disciples to pray, he said, give us this day our what? Monthly allotment. So that I don't have to come back. I've got it all stowed away and I know what is on tomorrow's plate. I know that we're taken care of. No, someone should say. That's not what he said. He said what? Give us this day our daily bread. Daily bread. That means tomorrow I need to depend on who? On God. I need to be depending on Him every hour, as the song goes. Seeking Him. That means I'm snacking. Whatever metaphor you like to use. I'm talking about spiritual, not physical, okay? Not condoning gluttony or anything like that. But some of us could be accused of overstudying. But being in His Word, being in His community, feed my sheep, sharing the Word with one another. But then Jesus goes on, not only the third time does He say, feed my sheep. He says, I tell you the truth in verse 18, when you were younger, you dressed yourself and you went where you wanted. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands and someone else will dress you and lead you where you do not want to go. Jesus said this to indicate the kind of death that which Peter would glorify God. And then He said, follow me. Interesting that Jesus reminds or tells Peter, you're going to die. You're going to die following me, glorifying me. That loving me is going to take everything that you have. But you will glorify the Father. You will glorify me. But it will cost you your life. And then, just like He said before, take up your cross and follow me. He says to Peter, now follow me. Follow me. It's going to be worth it. It's going to be great. You're going to accomplish great things for the Lord. It's an exciting adventure, and there is a great destiny for you in heaven. For in John 14, He says, I go to prepare a place for you. If it were not so, I would have told you. In my Father's house are many mansions or many rooms. It's going to be great. It's going to be worth it. And so there in that encounter, that brief encounter with Peter, He in a sense restores Peter. He had denied him three times. He was asked three times, do you love me? And so this morning, I ask you in very real terms, do you love Jesus? Are you sure you love Jesus? And then that third question, oh, tell me why. Tell me why you love Jesus. And when you dig into that, you have words to share with one another. You have words to feed others. This is why I love Jesus. And it can be as simple as because He first loved me. He died for me. While I was still a sinner, He died for me. And it is a story that cannot be hid. It is a story that cannot be silenced. You've got to tell someone. You have got to share the good news. Jesus came down from heaven to be with us, to live with us, to teach us, to reveal God to us, to die on that cruel cross, to be raised up, to sit at the right hand of God. And He is coming back. And He says to you, follow me. If your life, for any reason, has not been consistent with the following of God's Word, He still loves you. He's not denying you. He's got forgiveness available to you. Just like Peter. Just like so many who will hear His Word and respond. We've got a great message here. Let's not deny Him as we stand and sing. I keep on.